My name is Mark Bohm. I'm with Aviva in the program committee this year. And it's my privilege, on behalf of the program committee, to introduce to you Mr. Bill Sheridan. Bill is a frequently published freelance writer, writing coach, editor, and blogger. His first book is Depot Street Memories, The Lawler Chronicles. And if you don't believe it, I have a copy of it right here. This is his first book. It just came out. It's hot off the press. It's a memoir of the character and characters that helped shape his life while growing up in small Northeast Iowa hometown of Lawler. And it's a very refreshing and relaxing book. So much so that when I took the plane ride here and was reading it, I fell asleep. So you might be able to use that if you pick up a copy on your way back. His passion is helping others communicate their ideas, concepts, and stories, both in the spoken and written word. Aside from writing, he brings a broad background of practical work experience to the table. He was a high school speech and composition teacher, a radio announcer and disc jockey. He's had 20 years in life insurance sales. He was a sales manager and trainer for a top-rated life insurance agency, a home office trainer for a Fortune 500 company, past president of a national training organization, presenter at a National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, coach and mentor to insurance agents and managers, and now he's taken on a new role as owner of Sheridan Writes, LLC. Please join me in welcoming Mr. Bill Sheridan.
I was about to say this is a class organization, then I saw Dave Doss walk in, and I have my doubts about that. Mark, thank you for the nice introduction, and unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I meant to tell you as I walked in, someone gave me a note from the hotel saying that they had some bad news and some good news from your home back in Iowa. The bad news is that there was a fire in your bathroom this morning. The good news is they got it out before it reached the house. I would like, one of the things that really bugs me when I'm sitting where you are, and that's when the speaker asks you to close your eyes. And I'm going to do exactly ask you to do in just a second what I don't want other people to have me do. But our talk today is on presentations. And what I'd like you to do, until I tell you otherwise, I want you to close your eyes. Please close your eyes tight. And I want you to think about the first professional speech or presentation that you gave. I'm going to ask a couple of you to just briefly share what that is. I want you to think of where you were, what the subject matter was, who was in the group. Just, I want you to think about how you felt at that very moment when you were giving your first presentation. Now think about it. I'm going to ask a couple of you. In my first presentation that I ever gave, and keep your eyes closed, I was 14 years of age. I gave a talk, a little old lady named Sadie Knight was moving out of town, and we had a potluck supper for her, and someone told them that Sheridan, Bill Sheridan, a sophomore in high school, might do a good job making this presentation. So what I want you to do, after I count to three, I want you to get an idea of what I look like at age 14. One, two, 3. Not only that, I was probably about 100 pounds lighter than I am now. How many of you would admit that when you have to give a presentation or get to give a presentation, that you're just a little bit nervous? I want you to raise your hand if you get good, because I'm in that category too. That has, for some reason, that has never changed. What I'm going to do is share with you a couple things that I learned about easing your nerves when you're giving a presentation. About probably 10, 12 years ago, I came to Dallas from Des Moines. I was, at the time I was with, then it was Ameris, now it's Aviva. And I got certified to teach a class called Overcoming Sales Call Reluctance. And in this particular class, it's taught by Shannon Goodson and George Dudley. And they are scientists. And what they have proven is that there are at least a dozen forms of verifiable sales call reluctance. And one of them might be using the telephone. One of them might be asking for referrals. One might be calling on family members. One might be calling on people that you think are more important than you. And one of them is giving seminars, giving the talks. And if you are in sales, rather regardless of what type of sales it is, if you don't give seminars, it's irrelevant. But if you do give seminars, then you've got to figure out what the problem is and how do I get over it and how can I calm down. And there are several techniques that they teach. One is, and you may have heard of this, is the yellow dot. Would you pass those out, please? And the yellow dot is just what it sounds like. Now, Mark's going to throw some down at each table. And what I'd like you to do is peel off one of the dots and put it on something. I don't care what you put it on, but put it on something. And I've used this for a long, long time. And some even put it on their watch. I tried that this morning, but I couldn't read my watch, so I didn't do it. And you're going to get various colored dots. But it's a little technique. I can't tell you why it works. I'm just going to tell you that it does work. And on the yellow dot, or the whatever color dot you get, you write something that is uplifting and building. Like on mine, I wrote smile. These are notes to myself. Joy. Pericomo. Some of you old geezers like me. Pericomo was the most relaxed guy you ever met. Another one I wrote on here is Dean Martin. And I just aspire, if I'm going to be in front of a group, to be totally relaxed and really enjoying it. So some other things, I wrote down slow. Slow down. Because I talk about 85 miles an hour with wind gusts up to 150. So I have to remind myself, just Sheridan, slow down. The other thing that I do is I write the name of people that care for me. And so I have written on some of my cards. By the way, this is going to be the lowest of the low-tech classroom things that you have while you're here. I may be the only one without a PowerPoint, and we'll talk about that later. So I use note cards, and I recommend you use note cards. Some people think, well, they're distracting. It bugs me if I go into a restaurant, and the person comes over, about 1 in 10 times this happens, and he or she takes your order and takes great pride in not writing it down. Unfortunately, they don't always take the same pride in getting the order correct. Now, they come back with whatever they think that you probably ordered. So I say take notes. And on mine and every one of my note cards, I have a little note on my yellow dot. Renee, Jesus, Ed, that's my son. Rebecca's my daughter-in-law. Tommy, one of my sons. And it's self-affirming when I'm giving a talk. I see something there that even if you don't like me, I know somebody does. So that's the value in using the yellow dots. Another one that I use all the time is a squishy ball. Now, it's proven that if you suddenly get tense, that your hands can get cold and clammy, And I saw this happen at that call reluctance thing where the speaker got up and she had us push one of those little cards. They call them mood cards. You probably have seen them. And it rates what kind of mood you're in. What that really is, it's does your temperature. So they had us press on a card that they handed out to us. And a little bit later they said, oh, by and then you look to see what your kind of your score was on it. And then a little bit later they ask, they said, oh, by the way, four or five of you are going to come up after a while and make some sample call reluctance. You're going to make some phone calls. And then they had us do that again, and all of our scores dropped. They weren't really going to do that. We didn't know it, but we thought maybe they're going to call on us, and we got nervous. So doing this, Mark, would you go ahead and throw those around? And what I like to think of is have a ball when you're giving a speech. And if you don't do this, I'm going to recommend that you do it. It works. Now, for the last hour, I've been kind of hanging around, waiting for the people to come in, and I've just been squishing my squishy ball. And it's comforting. Another one, and this is not a new thing, but it's the rubber band thing. And what the rubber band is, they call zapping. The only time I ever get in trouble when I am giving a talk and I get tense is when I think more about I'm worried about more about me than I'm about you. As long as I'm focused on you, thinking, you know, maybe something I'm going to share here is going to make somebody's life a little bit easier when they're giving talks, I don't have any problems because my focus is on you. It's not on me. If I start getting nervous, that means I'm thinking about me and I'm worried about what you're going to think of me. And sometimes our worst enemy is ourselves. So what they tell you to do is zap yourself. When you're walking down the corridor or you're walking on your way to give a talk, don't do it underneath because of you guys are underwriters. You know better than me how that might affect you. But just go like this and snap it. And it breaks. I don't know why. I don't know how. All I know is that it can break the tension and make you get rid of that, as Zig Ziglar says, stinking thinking. And reorient yourself. Hey, I'm good. I can do this, and I'm going to do it well. So it's just called zapping, and just put a rubber band on your wrist and snap it from the top. Another one. This was easier before we had digital cameras, and that is get a cotton ball, and you could put it in those little 35-millimeter camera film that you could get. It was just perfect. And what they teach you to do is find something you're successful at. Maybe it's shooting free throws. Maybe it's throwing pennies against the wall to try to get them close. Maybe it's throwing something at a dartboard. I don't care what it is. But every time that you succeed at it, you take like an M&M, you're going to gain 400 pounds, but you reward yourself. And even, now this sounds silly, but I'm going to tell you it works. You clap for yourself, and then you smell something that you like. Maybe if it's perfume, maybe it's an aftershave, maybe you've sprayed something of leather, or you guys played a ball and you had the smell of a leather glove or a saddle, whatever the smell is, and you capture that in a piece of cotton. And then you put it in some container. Like I say, those containers were easy to get when you bought film. You'd have to find something different. Then before you give a speech, you smell it. You don't tell anybody, you just smell it. And just don't make a big deal about it. But again, it reminds you, you are a successful person. You can do this, and you can do it well. Be careful with jokes. Very candidly, most people aren't good at telling jokes. That's just a fact. And the other thing with internet, most stories go around so quickly, everybody's heard them anyway. And also, you have to be careful about being politically correct. So just be very careful about telling jokes. If you're going to do it, I suggest two things. I suggest tell them on yourself. So when I talked about putting the rug in my head, you weren't expecting that. But I was making fun of myself. I knew before I got here that I wasn't the only one that would be follically challenged. I knew there might be a few others that were. But I have never, ever minded being bald. It's just that I've been this way since I was in my mid-20s. This is my late brother's do, by the way. Funny story. He always wanted me to wear one. And that's when I had a little hair on the side. And he wore hairs for years. And then I would see him. He'd come through my town a couple times a month because of a business he had. And I noticed he didn't wear it. And I said, Mike, how come you quit wearing your rug? Was it bothering your scalp? He said, no. He said, I got thinking about it. Every Sunday I went bike riding and boating with my best friends and I didn't wear it. And I thought, who the hell am I trying to kid? So he just quit wearing it. And so I've had a lot of fun with that through the years. But if you're going to tell a joke, number one, tell it on yourself or get permission. My little story about Mark's outhouse. I knew he wouldn't mind, but I ask him. I say, Mark, do you care if I tell this little story? He's, no, that's fine. But you don't want to offend somebody, and it's just not worth it for a little story. At the end, I'm going to hand out a little survey that I did. Very unscientific, but very revealing. When I got invited to make this presentation, I sent out a questionnaire to about 25 people, and I got about 20 replies. And they were just people that I respected, that I knew, have seen a certain number of speakers through the years. And I said, I want you to write down some things, 3 to 5 things that absolutely tick you off about a presenter, that just really irritate you. And I want you to put down 3 or 5 things that are home runs, that you think are absolutely fantastic. And so that's what they did. And you're going to get the results of those surveys. I'll hand them out at the very end. And I got some interesting side comments. One of them said, don't start out your speech, good morning or good afternoon, because what's the next thing they want? They want a response. Invariably, what do they say? I can't hear you. And then people come back with a rousing, good afternoon. It's overused. It's cliche. You don't want to be Mr. or Ms. Cliche. Try to be a little different in your presentation. Don't try to do what everybody else has done. And they're not, you know, if somebody's already done that today, I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying, do your best to be different than the other speakers. Use a microphone. I cannot tell you the number of times. I need an aside here. If there's one thing that I feel that I'm have a fair degree of expertise in, it's public speaking. I would guess that there's not another person in this room who has seen and heard as many speakers as I have. And the reason for that, during my 7 or 8 years I keep saying Ameris, because that's where it was when I left or they left me, it was Aviva. Or as Aviva, I was in charge of putting together meetings like this. And we call them education conference, and we'd have between 400 and 800 people in any given year attend them someplace around the country. So I've literally seen hundreds and hundreds of videos. And I have seen many, many speakers, including professional speakers and breakout class speakers. And I could start watching a video and never seen the person, and halfway through it, I could shut it off and I could tell you the next thing they're going to say. Occasionally I do that with my wife. I'd say, I want you to watch some videos with me. And she said, how did you know that? I said, because I heard it 100 times from other people. So try to be different. But getting back to the thing about using a microphone, usually it's a testosterone thing. It's a guy. I don't need a microphone. Can you hear me? Well, guess what? The people in the front rows are going to be nodding. There are a lot of people, just like I don't mind being bald, I don't mind wearing hearing aids. Before I didn't have to use them. And I have the over-the-ear kind, so they can be seen. And the only reason I have the over-the-ear kind is you can hear better with them. I have a number of friends who start asking me, and I'm 66, and people 50 years old start saying, oh, I'm starting to have some hearing issues. And they'll say, well, I'm too vain to start wearing them. My point is, if you are giving a speech or you are making a presentation and you decide you're not going to use a microphone, you're hurting two people. You're hurting yourself because that guy is going to tune out or that gal is going to tune out, or you're hurting the person who's not going to hear your message. And I've just seen over and over again, women tend to use it. Now, don't get silly about it. If you're in a group talking to 10 people, don't have a microphone. But if you're in a group of, I don't care if it's 30, because not only are you going to have people hear you that would not hear you, you also have an air of authority. There's just something of like, this is coming from God. You know, it's from a high, you can get attention. And ironically, I started this, preparing for this talk, about 2 months ago, and I just work on it periodically. In Sunday's Des Moines Register, there was an article, and it says, Des Moines teachers get attention with microphones in class. And the whole story is about first kindergarten and first grade teachers using a microphone so that they're not dead tired at the end of the day shouting at the kids. And they're finding out that they get the kids' attention and it gives them an air of authority. And they've, now that they've started doing it, they said sometimes when they have microphone problems, by the end of the day, they're pooped out. So use a microphone. You're doing yourself a favor and you're doing people who are listening to you a favor. And they're just going to disengage. If you don't get them involved, they're not going to listen to you. Don't look at just half the audience like I'm doing right now. The church that I attend in Des Moines, the pastor has since retired, but this is what he's done for the last 6 or 7 years. Now, he was older when I first started going to church there, so I didn't feel like I had a right to tell him that there's somebody over here someplace too. But I wish somebody would have somewhere saying there's another side of the audience. Because you just know, if you're sitting over here, you might get a little bit of glance, and then you're back looking over here. So an interesting experiment. Some of you may have read this or seen it. And that is where the professors did not know they were doing this to them. But they set the professors up. They said, we want to teach a half hour, an hour class. And what they did, they told this side of the room, The minute he starts talking, I want you to look bored. I want you to just look defiant. I want you to just look distracted. Just don't seem interested. This half of the room, I want you to act like you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. I want you to be at the edge of your seat. I want you just to be absolutely totally interested, be nodding your head, be taking your notes. And guess what? Within 10 minutes of that half hour, 45-minute talk, they found that to a person, the professor was being set up, was looking at the side of the room that acted like they cared. And so if you're out giving a talk on underwriting and you see somebody sitting over here, maybe you think he or she's belligerent, doesn't like you, think he or she knows more than you, so you're going to avoid them. I say that person needs as much attention as everybody, and not only that, he or she is sitting next to people who have a right to know what you're talking about. Also, try to avoid getting on the little one-on-one conversations with someone sitting in the front row. Mark, how you doing? Now, how do the rest of you feel? I'm having this one-on-one conversation with this bozo and forgetting all the rest of you. Okay? So include everybody in it. Here's the other thing. Okay, Mark, ask me an underwriting question. Okay. Now, what I should have done is, Mark, am I correct? What rating would I give with someone with chronic asthma? Is that correct? Okay. Are there others of you concerned with that question? And the answer is probably yes. Now, I've condensed his question. I've cleared it with him. And then I've repeated it. Now, that seems like such a common sense thing to do. Common sense is not common practice. Got it? Common sense is not necessarily common practice. I've seen it over and over again where a person, a well-meaning speaker, gets involved with someone in the first or second or third row, leaves other people out, and they become disengaged. So get involved with them. Totally different subject. If you are going to use technology in your presentation, and I define technology as anything that gets plugged in, a PowerPoint, a microphone, a DVD player, something with music, I don't care what it is, I want you to expect trouble. I want you to know there's going to be trouble. I want you to be absolutely shocked if there isn't trouble. I want you to think, when I go there, this ain't going to work. And so, what am I going to do when it doesn't work? I'm going to tell you a story that has to do with Ohio. Now, I like, except for the Buckeyes, I like Ohio. And one of my first road trips when I went to, when I was working with at Marist, was to go out and teach something called social styles. And if we have time, I'll talk a little bit more about social styles later. But with social styles, I can talk about it for 1 minute, I could talk about it for an hour, I could talk about it for 3 hours, or if I'm going to teach a whole class, I could do it the way you're supposed to do and teach it for a day and a half. Now, I went from Des Moines to Dallas, cost about, I think that to get certified, it cost me $2,000 or $3,000, the flight down there, and then we bought their stuff. And their stuff included six, now I'm sure it's DVDs, by the time we bought six videotapes and workbooks to go with them. And I flew out to Westerville, Ohio, which is outside of Columbus, with a guy I liked a lot named Rick Castell. And Rick was a general agent, and in the Marist terms, a general agent was the guy who hires other agents. So he had this program set up at his country club. Now, that's important, because they did not have, like this handsome gentleman sitting in the rear of the room, an AV expert. There was nobody there that knew anything about AV. So when I bought this equipment from the people at Social Styles, we spent these literally thousands of dollars to get me certified to go around and teach it. And I said to him, a gentleman out of Chicago, I really liked him. And I said, you know what, I need six backup tapes just in case one broke. I said, what's that going to cost me? And he said, $600. And I said, I don't think you understood me. I said, all I want is six videotapes, backup tapes. I'm not going to use them. I'm not going to give them away. I'm just going to have them just in case a tape breaks or I have a problem. So what would it cost me for those six backup tapes? And he said, I'm sorry, Bill, it's $600. I said, well, then I'm just going to have to do without. So he got on the plane and flew back to Chicago. I got in my car and drove down to EO Video Shop in Des Moines, Iowa, and for $5 a piece, I had six backup tapes. So now it's time to go to Ohio. It's in August. Thunderstorm's rolling in. This is before cell phones. I get into O'Hare. Still have another hour or two to my next flight. It's going to take another hour or two. Everything gets canceled. So we're having issues here because I'm calling him from a payphone, and I said, Rick, I'm not sure I'm going to get in. Long story short, I get in about midnight, got the hotel at 1 o'clock. I get up at 6 o'clock. He picks me up at 6:30, and we go out to this country club where he's holding his meetings. We get out there, and I always like to come early. I'd advise you to do the same thing. I was down here an hour ago looking over the room and just kind of making sure everything was the way I wanted, the microphones worked and so forth. So I put the tape in. It works perfectly for 30 seconds. Locks up tighter than a drum. Now, you have no idea how important this was to me because that class was so structured. It was going to go a full day and then a half day. Rick had people driving in from all over I don't know how big his area was, but I've worked in agencies, and I know it's not a bit uncommon for someone to drive 3 hours. He had spent the money for the country club. He had probably spent money to house some people. He had meals lined up. That was going to happen whether they got that thing out of the machine or not. It's just close to 9 o'clock. He said, well, Bill, we got to get going. In the meantime, I think it was this cook was trying to get, they didn't have an AV guy, was trying to get the tape out of the machine, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And so he said, well, just start. So I go up there, and I'm just rambling on, and I'm just sweating bullets. And I get the tap on the shoulder, and they said, we can't get it out, but we have an extra video player, if that would help. Thank you, Lord. My $5 tape went in that I had had as a backup, and the show went on. And then I was able to use original other five tapes, and eventually, before I left, they got the old tape out. But I had a backup plan. So when you go out and you're going to give a talk, assume the worst and be thrilled when something bad doesn't happen. And PowerPoints, have your PowerPoint printed out, but wait and hand them out if and when you want to do it. Anybody know who Don Hewitt is? Think television. Don Hewitt. Anybody? Don Hewitt is the creator of 60 Minutes. And it is the longest running, I think, it's the longest running television show on the air. It's just been on for, you know, since Shep was a pup. It's just been on forever. So he had a mantra. And his mantra was four words, tell them a story. Tell them a story. Tell them a story. And he would fight with his people. Now, because he did that, now there's Dateline and there's 2020 and there's probably some others. And, so, and every one of them, there's a 12 to 15 minute story. Tell them a story. I can tell you that I don't remember one thing I've ever seen in a PowerPoint. I don't remember one thing I've ever seen on a chalkboard. I don't remember one thing I've seen on the old overhead projector slides. But I remember stories. And an example. I'm 66. I graduated from high school in 1962. So what, 46, 47 years? I don't know. A long, long time ago. How many of you can remember what your main speaker said at graduation? High school graduation? Now, Doss got his GED, so he doesn't count. But the rest, I didn't get permission, but I'm going to pick on him because I've known him for so long. Dave and I, a bunch of people, used to walk down, when I was at Ameris, we'd walk down the skywalk to lunch. And Dave would say, I got an interesting story. And we'd say, Doss, you tell the story. We'll decide if it's interesting. So that'd be kind of an ongoing thing. But anyway, my high school graduation speaker, he was an old guy, probably 50. Now, I can say that now since I'm 66. But he seemed like he was ancient. And he gave a talk about a person who went down, this young man whose jet crashed in a recent war. I'm guessing it was Korea. I don't remember that part of it. I'm guessing it was Korean, based on what the year it was. And he talked about this young man and what a great guy he was and how we should aspire to be like him and have his courage and his will to do the things that, even though his life got cut short, he had accomplished all these things, and we should be like that. And at the very end, he said, by the way, that was my son. And he walked away and sat down. And you could have heard a pin drop. And within seconds, there was a standing ovation. I've never forgotten that story. So, how does that apply to you? When you go out and you give a presentation, you've got to talk about the high blood pressure and you've got to talk about the diabetes. I understand that. But if you can personalize it. I know about the HIPAA rules. Use common sense. Make it common. Don't give away names. You can stretch things about what city, somehow disguise it. But if I'm sitting there and you're talking about why, and I know that I'm sure nobody's ever heard that Prudential does a better job underwriting, and New York Life does a better job underwriting, and the Wildlife of Texas does a better job of underwriting. I mean, we've heard that. You have to tell your story, but I think you're smart to give some specific examples. without giving away the farm and what it's about. They're going to remember that if you tell a story. And an interesting thing, I didn't say this, but I sold insurance for, I was 10 years part-time with Aviva, 10 years full-time with Money Mutual of New York, and then came back to Aviva both in sales and in an agency. So I have a lot of experience in this. And one thing that I learned, and this is a tip of the hat to you, my mentor told me the underwriters are right. Now, Bob was my hero. He died here in his 80s here about a year and a half ago. I said, what do you mean the underwriters are right? He said, when I started this business, and he was a top producer, a big producer with Mutual of New York, he said, I used to get angry when a case didn't go through. And he said, invariably, within 2 years, I found out they were right. The guy with high blood pressure died or had a heart attack. So anyway, that's an aside, but I want you to know that. But tell story, just like I just told a story there, tell your stories. It makes it more interesting. Use props. You know, again, it's the third time I've done it, but what's my prop? Well, my first prop is my rug, okay? Use props. I give talks to underwriter groups occasionally. Now it used to be National Association of Life Underwriters. Now it's NAFA. And I give one called, If Life Gave Mulligans, What I Would Have Done Different in the Business. And those of you who are golfers know what a mulligan is. If this was in Des Moines and not here, I would have bought a golf club with me and done the old Johnny Carson thing and talked about golfing. Well, a mulligan for you non-golfers is a do-over. It's like a delete button on your computer. It's like it never happened. So what you do, you get together with the other three liars in your group, and you say, here's what we're going to do today for mulligans. You get a mulligan off the first nine, and you get a mulligan off the second nine, off the tee, which means if you have an errant shot into the pond or into the weeds, you just pretend it King's X didn't happen, you hit again. That's a mulligan. Well, when I'm talking about the mulligans, if I had a mulligan in life insurance, in my life insurance career, what would have I done differently? But I use this, or since I'm here, a golf ball, since I'm talking about golf. Another one that I talked about, this probably cost $2. My 5-year-old grandson has outgrown it, and I talk about the same Bob Jamieson, how one thing I learned from him was getting an early start every day. We would start every day, almost every day, at 7 o'clock having coffee, exchange pleasantries, talk about our respective families. Then we would talk about work. And I tell them if they'll start every day, get a head start on it, they're going to be better off. It's a little thing, but it's talking about getting up early, getting a start in the day, and it just might help somebody remember it. Respect the time allotted to you. Don't go on and go over your time. First of all, you ain't that good, and the reason that I know that is I ain't that good. If someone gives me an hour, I'll use the hour. If they want 90 minutes, I'll give them 90 minutes. If they want a day and a half, I'll give a day and a half. I'll figure it out. But I'm not going to say, give me an hour, and then take longer. There's three people, if you go over your time, by the way, I have with me, carry this with me all the time, a Pampered Chef, ding, 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 ding. And this is going to go off. It's going to shut me up to make sure that I don't go too long. I've said it before my time is up. So you'll hear it. I'll forget about it. It's going to ding, and that'll be my time. I know just to have a few minutes. So who are you going to tick off? You're going to tick off Mark Boehm, in my case, because Mark was fine enough to ask me to throw my hat in the ring to come and present to this wonderful group. And why should I disrespect him by rambling on? And to top it off, I'm getting a few bucks for doing this, for coming down here. Now, many times when we do things in our industry, you go out and you're not going to get paid for doing it. It's just part of your job, as it was part of my job. But now that I'm retired, it's a little bit different deal for me. It's just what I'm doing in retirement, one of the things I'm doing in retirement. But when you go out to speak, I've been in agencies. I've been to home offices, Aviva and the principal, so I know how it works. When you go out to speak, very often you're just one of about 10 people on the agenda because you're at an agency or a brokerage or someplace. They have a two-day event or whatever it is, or a full day, and there are other people. So you're going to tick off now the other speakers. Why are you so great? Why am I so great that I should take up somebody else's time? Most importantly, why should I offend the audience? You think you're here for an hour. Well, you should think correctly. At the end of the hour, go to your bathroom break, go have your cola for those 1% that still smoke, go have your cigarette, check your voicemails, do whatever it is you're going to do. But don't sit and listen here to some bald guy from Des Moines rattling on past his time. So respect everybody's time and somehow keep track of it. And this 20-minute Pamper Chef thing works like a charm for me. And one other little thing, when I was a kid, one of my heroes was Elvis. It seems funny now looking back, but it was the start of rock and roll, and the whole world is going to go to hell in a handbasket because of Elvis and people like him, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and Conway Twitty and some of those people, the original rock and roll. By the way, you know you're getting old when you listen to oldie station and the music is too new for you. But anyway, I'm just a big Elvis fan, and my wife now of 44 years, I say that she's lucky. My brothers and sisters think that she'd get sympathy being married to me for that long. But I used to have her sit through back-to-back Elvis movies, the same one twice. Now, we look back, and if you look at an old Elvis movie sometime, they were bad. Every movie he played himself, he just had a different name. One of them be Deke Rivers. What's wrong with the name Deke? You know, he played a guy just going to become famous in rock and roll. But I remember a line from one of those shows, and that was, always leave them wanting. He said, my daddy always said, always leave them wanting. I didn't understand that until I realized now they had this thing. His big thing was, Elvis has left the building, and everybody wanted one more song. But you ain't going to get one more song because Elvis has left the building. So always leave them wanting. When you go out and speak someplace, don't give them the whole thing. Save something for the next time around. Get them so they want to have you come back. Three things you should know before you speak. Know thy audience. Know thy material. And know thyself. Know thy audience. Know thy material. And know thyself. When I say know thy audience, ask a few questions about what's expected of you, men, women, approximate age. I said to Mark, I was chosen to speak, I said, I'm guessing there's all going to be a bunch of young people just starting out in underwriting who haven't been given talks. He said, no. He said, with the budget cutbacks, fewer people are being sent. He said, you're going to get a lot of some older folks and some middle-aged folks, and just you're going to get a nice balance. You're going to be about half women, half men. I found out a little bit about you, and that was very helpful for me in presenting, making my preparation. So know your audience as best you can. Know your material. Just like in real estate, everything is location, location, location. I think in preparation, it's practice, practice, practice. And I had a nice conversation with this young lady. Would you raise your hand when it first came in? Right over here. About practicing. I practiced this. You should have seen how good I was in my basement office practicing this. I wowed them. I mean, I was getting standing ovations. They just thought I was wonderful. But I would practice it over and over. But it never came out the same. I just knew there are certain, you know, I've got note cards, but they're just to keep me, just kind of keep me on track. And just practice it so that you feel good about it. My first major league ball game was in, the closest one to Des Moines at the time was Milwaukee, and I saw the Milwaukee Braves, not the Atlanta Braves, the Milwaukee Braves play the Los Angeles Dodgers, my beloved Dodgers who had moved from Brooklyn to L.A. And it was such a thrill. I was 12 or 13 years old seeing my heroes out there. And we got there early to watch batting practice and infield practice and various things they do. And I thought, wow, these guys are 20 to 40 years old. They've been playing ball since they're knee-high to a grasshopper. And here they are still practicing. So who do I think I am? Who do you think you are getting up in front of a group without practicing? I mean, just do it. Do yourself a favor. Just know your audience, know your material. Finally, know yourself. Don't try to be, I shouldn't try to be Mark Baum. I shouldn't try to be Dave Doss. I shouldn't try to be somebody else. They have their gig. They know how they most effectively communicate. I know how I do it, so I should be the best I am. I once worked at a radio station. I was a full-time teacher, young guy, 25, 26 years old. And I always wanted, one thing I give myself an attaboy for, if I want to do something, I do it even if I'm afraid. I wanted to be a freelance writer. I just started writing stories, started getting them published. Well, I always thought it'd be fun to work at a radio station. So I walked down the local radio station and one time, and I was scared to death. And I talked to the president, and he said, what can you do? And I said, I can do anything. I can write commercials. I can do on air. And so they gave me an air test where one guy's in one room listened to me, and they gave me some copy. And so I was reading it. And they ended up hiring me about a month later. And I did some morning shows on the weekends. And I did in the summer as a teacher. I'd do some fill-in for in evenings. It was great, great, great fun. Well, one day I was reading the news one Saturday morning, and we had the news at 7:05 to 7:15 and from 8:35 to 8:45. And during that time, the first time I thought, you know, you sound like Bill Sheridan. That isn't very good. You need to sound like a disc jockey. You need to read the news the way the news is supposed to be read. So I did that. There was an accident on 15th Avenue North today, and in there was, by the way, the weather, tomorrow it's going to be 40 degrees, and we're looking for sunshine here in Fort Dodge. So I was feeling real good about, I sound like a real radio announcer. The phone rings. The news ends. We have a record on. The phone rings, and people always assume there's 20 people around. Those little stations, there's one person locked. You're doing it all. I mean, you're cleaning the toilets, and you're starting the news, and you're doing the records. You're doing it all. So this lady called, and she said, I said, KVFD, yes, this is Emma, and my sister and I have been listening to the news, and that Mr. Sheridan sounds like such a nice young man. And I said, he really is. And she said, well, I heard the news today, and I thought, oh, here I go. And I want you to know that my sister and I couldn't understand one word that he said. So I said, he is a great guy. I'm going to have a little talk with him, and it won't happen again. That was it. From then on, I read the news the way Bill Sheridan reads the news. So know your audience, know your material, and know yourself. To PowerPoint or not to PowerPoint, that is the question. There is not a right or wrong answer to that. I know that PowerPoints are the standard. I have two opinions. One that's kind of an opinion, and one that I'm absolutely 100% sure of. The kind of opinion is that PowerPoints are overused. I think you get too much of it. The thing I know about is they're misused. If you are going to use a PowerPoint, and I'm not against them, but if you're going to use them, remember, large font is king. Make sure it can be read. Remember I talked earlier about people that can't hear aren't going to tell you? Also, if they can't see it, they're not going to tell you. And I'll tell you one thing that drives me stark raving mad, and that is somebody having something up there, and they say, well, I know you can't see this. And I want to say, then why do you have it up there? If you know I can't see it, why is it up there? Make a handout. Give it to them. But don't have some chart up there and then say, I know that you can't see this. The 5x5 rule, you've heard it. 5 bullet points, and 5 words per line. And then I learned a thing from an outfit by the name of Dardis. I'll give them a commercial, D-A-R-D-I-S, out of Des Moines. They do this thing on communications, and they talk about clearing a slide. And so what they would do, you stand to the left of the screen, and you say, here are the 5 things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about hypertension. We're going to talk about diabetes. We're going to talk about financial underwriting and the other two. And then they put something in front of the slide so you can't see it, so it's blank. And so then you start talking about those issues. And you spend a minute or so on each one. But you just talk about them and maybe have your note cards. But you don't stand there reading. I'll tell you something. If you stand like this with your back to the audience, reading a slide, everything on there that they can read, somebody's going to kill you. Somewhere along the line, somebody's going to shoot you. Now, I'm going to advise you something. Don't let that happen in Des Moines in about 3 weeks, because I'm going to be on jury duty. And if I'm on jury duty and I hear that you read the slide word for word and somebody shot you, I'm going to say, free as a bird, justifiable homicide. You know, do not do that. If you don't use PowerPoint, use a flip chart. If you're going to use a flip chart, I've got 7 minutes, so I'll have you out of here. So I'm going to have to skip a couple things. We're just going to talk about this. If you're going to use a flip chart, make sure that you do in big letters what you're going to write, and that people can see it, and also repeat what you have on there for those who can't see it, and have them take notes on it. And also, I always bring a marker with me and make sure that it's, if you're going to use a whiteboard, you bring dry erase. If you're going to bring user flip chart, because very often they don't have bright markers because people don't use them too much. And that was the case here. Had a chance to get to it, I was going to go a little bit more into social styles. I'll just touch on that. But bring your own markers so that you can be seen. The last thing that I'll talk about, and would you start passing those out so that everybody has one? And I'm just going to talk a little bit about, and what he has on there is not what I'm talking about at this moment. You have to deliver bad news sometimes. And in order to keep from having to do, let me reset this, please. People think that what you should do is use the golden rule when you're dealing with people. That's treat people the way you want to be treated. Wrong. Use the platinum rule. Treat people the way they want to be treated. An example I give is, let's just say my wife and I, we have different versions of what we want to do if we have the flu. Let's say if she has the flu, she wants to come in every half hour, put a damp cloth on her forehead saying, how you doing, honey? Can I get you some 7-Up? What can I do for you? Let's say when I have the flu, all I want is a dark room and a bathroom and privacy. So what happens if we use the golden rule? If I treat her the way I want to be treated, I'm not going to go in. I'm going to ignore her. She's going to think he doesn't love me. What's the matter with the jerk? If she treats me the way she wants to be treated and she comes in every half hour, I'm just not interested in that. So learn to treat people the way they want to be treated. One of the things that I learned, I talked about social styles, we all have certain characteristics. And if we had time, I would have drawn on the board a quadrant. And on the top left, it would say analytical. It would say driver. It would be expressive and amiable. And what that means is it's the way that we act most of the time and the way we act under pressure. So if you're dealing with a driver is the type of person that says, don't tell me about the labor pains, show me the baby. Don't tell me about the choppy seas, where's the ship? They just want to get to it. And so when you are dealing with a person like that, an underwriting, and have to deliver bad news, don't be talking about this weekend sports. Don't be lollygagging around. Get to it. Tell them what your answer is. And also give them one or two choices. That's the best way to deal with them. If you're working with an amiable, that person wants to feel like you love him. They're the ones, you hear the expression, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. They're the Mother Teresa's of this life. A person like that, you just want it. You have to sympathize with them and talk to them. The expressives, and that's what most salespeople are, a lot of the people you're dealing with, they have the attention span of a gnat. And you say, let's have a party tonight. And they say, no, let's have one this afternoon. But you have to be able to get that news to them quickly and try to socialize with them. And analytical, you can only, you cannot give them enough information. So if you know the person that you're talking to is analytical, you have to give them more time and attention and reasons for making the decision that you did. I wish I had more time to deal with that, and I knew I had a lot that I was going to cover today. I think the last thing, just to literally have 2 minutes, I want you to turn to the where it says speaker errors. And the ones that caught my attention, four people said, don't have a condescending attitude. Treat your audience, this, my comments, treat your audience with respect. Down there, number 11, half of them said the things that irritate them, reading slides facing the screen. Drives them crazy. So this one's a biggie. Go to the next page, the back page, and it talks about be passionate and be uplifting, be brief, and the biggest one, have some humor, have a sense of humor. So I promised you'd be out here in time. If anybody has any questions, I've got a few minutes, you can come up afterwards, but it's just been an absolute delight to talk to you, and I thank you for your attention. I will say, if you, right now my book's in the top, it's the top bestseller list in Lawler, Iowa, a town of 500. The Lawler Times has it number one. It's the only book that's ever been written about Lawler. I've sold 450 copies. That means of the 50 of them haven't bought it yet, so I don't know what the deal was. But that's on my website. It's on there. And if anybody's ever interested in me coming and talking to your group of underwriters in your home city about this subject, I would talk pretty much about what I did today.
Thank you very much, Bill.
That's great. Thank you.